listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We get another update from the Concordia University system today. We're going to talk about what is the Concordia University system? Why do we have a system? What are the benefits of that? All in just a moment. Today's episode is underwritten by Concordia University, Nebraska. You can learn more about Concordia University, Nebraska at cune.edu. Joining us today, the Reverend Dr. Jameson Hardy, president of the Concordia University system. Dr. Hardy, welcome back.
Great to be with you.
And the Reverend Dr. Douglas Patel, vice president of the Concordia University system. Welcome back.
Always a pleasure.
So we have a Concordia University system comprised of a number of Concordia universities across the United States. How was this established and why?
It's really a great question. I think the church has always recognized the importance of having workers in the church. And so the original purpose of the Concordia University system and our Concordias was to train church workers. It's really that simple. And here in 2025, the reality is that still is our focus to train church workers. Now, the universities have morphed over the years, and I'm going to let Dr. Spatel talk a little bit about that. But in the mid-80s, we see a great increase in adding other programmatic things to the universities to help grow revenue and other things. But today, as well as in the beginning of time of the university system, we are to prepare church workers. That's what we do. Currently, we have 802 church workers in the entire system. We're working on a vision and a goal to have that increase to 1,000 by the fall of 2026. But you hear this throughout the church that there's we don't have enough workers. We don't have enough teachers. We don't have enough pastors. And the way to combat that is, frankly, to educate others to be able to go and do that. So yeah, the original purpose of the system was to train church workers, and we remain doing that today.
Dr. Spatel, tell us more about some of the history of the Concordia University system, because I know a brief, tiny, teeny bit of history of like my own Concordia, and that's about it. So share with us some more of that history.
Well, how many weeks do you have? Let's go way back. Our very first Concordia College was founded exactly for the reason Dr. Hardy spoke of. They needed to educate teachers and future pastors. And that was in 1839, right here in St. Louis.
Oh.
Most people think that, you know, they think of our history and they think of this, of Concordia Seminary, mm-hmm. but it was Concordia College that came first. And it was located here in St. Louis, and then it moved to Fort Wayne, Indiana, and it resided there. In fact, the buildings are still there. It's now part of the Indiana Technical Institute in Fort Wayne. But that Concordia College closed in 1959 with the opening of Concordia Senior College, which is now the campus of the Fort Wayne Seminary. So that was our very first college. And we've had a lot of colleges come and go over 150 plus years. We had colleges in Oakland, California. We had colleges in the Carolinas. We had college at some of our Johnnies on the air might remember St. John's in Winfield, Kansas.
Oh, yeah.
We had St. Paul's College in Concordia, Missouri. All these serve that same purpose, but for various and sundry reasons of changes in demographics and finances and whatever, they closed over the years. New ones opened. Concordia Irvine, California, is actually our newest. It opened in 1976, coincidental to the closing of the school in Oakland, California. Oakland didn't move to Irvine or anything like that. It's just Oakland closed, and 3 years later, Irvine opened. So, and colleges moved, and the senior college closed, and that program moved to Ann Arbor, and then got picked up by Chicago and Nebraska, and so on and on, to the point where now here we are. And we have five universities on multiple campuses, because not only do we have, you know, two campuses with Concordia, Wisconsin, but Concordia St. Paul has three micro campuses, and Concordia Irvine now has two micro campuses.
Two campuses.
And we're looking at more and more of these sorts of options to branch out across the country. The Concordia University system, as it exists today, came into existence in 1992 at the LCMS convention in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, go Pittsburgh, go Steelers.
Yeah, both of you guys like that.
yes, we do. And that was a little reorganization that happened when the old Board for Higher Education Services was split, because that board controlled both the seminaries and the colleges. And obviously, seminaries, they're very much more focused on just training pastors. And the universities are much broader, not only teachers and DCEs and deaconesses and these sorts of things, but also other godly vocations in the world. And so the synod, in its wisdom, saw the need to, you know, separate those out. So the seminaries are on their own now, and the colleges and universities came under the umbrella in 1992 of the Concordia University system. And then finally, as we have it today, the 2023 convention defined more specifically what we do with the CUS, with the ecclesiastical oversight of those universities, and working together and bringing them all together to work with one purpose and mission for training people in godly vocations for both church and the world.
You know, if I could just say a couple things about the microcampuses as well as CUS and what we do today. You know, we call ourselves Concordia University System, but, you know, we have these independent universities in the sense of that they're a part of the whole. And I think today you've probably heard us say this often. You know, we have five great presidents that are all on the same page, and our universities are all moving in the same direction. And church work preparation is really taking the forefront. Give an example, at Concordia St. Paul, they have 102 church workers of the 802, and it's their largest class that they've had in 10 years. Next, or this coming fall, Dr. Friedrich just told me on Saturday I was there that they're anticipating their largest incoming freshman class there. And so when you look at the 802, let me just break it down how it looks across the system, because I think it does matter. So you have 275 students that are in church work at Nebraska. That's our largest church work program. But there's a reason for that. President Bull is actually leading that university with a Lutheran critical mass model, which requires that to be the case. And it's been historically the teacher's college. Concordia University, Wisconsin's Ann Arbor comes in with 225 workers. So you have two of our universities that are pulling about 60% of all church workers. I believe Chicago's at 86 and Irvine is 120, what would be 124 or something.
About that, yeah.
And again, all of our universities are doing a great job. And I think they're picking up the pace. What I mean by picking up the pace is our role is to work with the whole university for the Lutheran identity of the whole university. But it's also to promote and provide them with this direction of preparing church workers. Now, I'll say this as well, the micro campuses. I just presented on this down in the Southern District and told them that we're looking at doing micro campuses. We have oasis places in the United States since the closure. So we have no universities west of Concordia, Ann Arbor in Ann Arbor, Michigan. You go north to south in the United States. There's nothing to the east, of Ann Arbor. Yeah. And so we have some oasis where Concordia, New York was, and then down in Selma. We have an opportunity in the Florida, Georgia district for a micro campus down there. We're actually leaving tomorrow. Douglas and I are leaving tomorrow to drive to Tennessee to meet with Roger Pavla, district president of Mid-South District, to look at a potential micro campus in his district. We have an invitation from Brian Saunders in Iowa West to look at a possible junior college model. We're looking at how to potentially add vocational training to the Concordia platform. You know, 60% of graduates, high school graduates, don't go into college. And so we're missing a huge market of students that we can train and have a Concordia experience. And that is the spiritual side as well as the athletic side at all of our Concordias, and be trained today in a vocation. And so while church work preparation is our centerpiece, it is our most important thing, we also believe that the rest of the vocations that we're training people for, we need good Lutheran fill in the blank, artists, mechanics, plumbers, you know, whatever, nurses and the like. So it is, it really amazes me that when you actually set forth to say, this is what we are trying to do, and you start achieving it, people are surprised by it. I'm not. I expect us to succeed in this. Mm-hmm. I expect us to be the best in church work preparation. And that's what Douglas and I are focusing on with this increased goal of 1,000 church workers by 2026. That's a 25% increase from what we have now. And people have asked me, well, you know, how are you going to do that? Well, we're a number of things we're doing. Helping to sponsor this coffee hour, helping to sponsor Higher Things this summer, the entire Higher Things platform. CUS and all of our universities is the chief sponsor. We have a number of events we're doing. CUS.edu, the website, I encourage you to go to CUS.edu. All of the protocols are on there. All of the prior approval processes are on there. And that's a big criticism we get today, right? Prior approval is some secretive thing. Folks, it's not secret. Go to CUS.edu and hit the tab that's got prior approval. And the protocol is there. It tells you exactly how we do it, why we do it, and what we're looking for. So there's a lot going on in CUS right now.
I want to talk more about that. We'll do that in just a moment. I want to talk about the relationship to the LCMS, to Synod, and what is that process all about. So we'll do that in just a moment. We are talking with the Concordia University System, getting an update and learning about the history of the system as well. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment right here on the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
At Concordia University, Nebraska, discover a distinctly Christian community that equips students to live by faith with courage, character, and conviction. Intentionally combining our Christian faith, Lutheran heritage, rigorous academics, and practical real-life experiences, we prepare students to fulfill a higher purpose in their vocations and life. Learn more about Concordia University, Nebraska at our website, cune.edu. That's cune.edu.
Welcome back to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
Today we're talking with the Reverend Dr. Jameson Hardy, President of the Concordia University System, and the Reverend Dr. Douglas Patel, Vice President of Concordia University System, learning about how we established this Concordia University System, why we have it, what are the benefits of it, how it all works. What is the relationship of the Concordia Universities to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, to Synod? What's that relationship? How is it defined today?
Well, the simple answer is they are schools of the church. So, I mean, that's the simple answer. I'll coin a phrase that Pat Ferry coined about Concordia, Wisconsin, but I think it applies to all of our Concordias. You know, these are the church's schools. And when I say that in complete context of everything. And it's important to understand that because when Synod and Convention adopted 704B this last summer, summer of 2023, they changed what the Concordia University System was to do. We previously had operational responsibility. We previously had master plan responsibility. We previously had indebtedness that we monitored. That is all given now to the Synod Board of Directors, and we do ecclesiastical oversight and Lutheran identity. That is what we do. But it doesn't minimize the rest of that stuff because the bylaws also call for CUS to work with the presidents, the boards of regents, and the faculty and students to advance the mission on behalf of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. So while we don't have direct responsibility or oversight on these other matters, they all play in together. I mean, as a parish pastor for 25 years, I've always said that financial matters are spiritual matters. They're spiritual in nature. And so while we don't have quote unquote operational control, if there's a university that's having financial difficulties, I consider that to be a spiritual problem. And so we have a good relationship with the presidents. And I think, you know, working together, we're able to advance the Synod's mission. And so the question is very clearly answered. These are the church's schools in every way, which without getting into this discussion is why the Concordia, Texas situation is such a profound problem. Because it was illegally taken from the Synod, and the bylaws were violated in that process. And so that's why when the question is asked, what's the relationship? In every way, these are the schools of the church.
How is that relationship, the CUS schools, the Concordia University System schools, how is that the same or different from an affiliation type of relationship?
Well, in an affiliation type of relationship, there is less, I don't want to say the word control, but for instance, the bylaws have reversionary interest that if a university fails, let's say, its proceeds, whatever they are at the end, they go back to Synod so that Synod can use those to continue that work maybe somewhere else. In an affiliation relationship, I'm not so sure that you'd have the same exact legal requirements when it comes to property and the like.
Yeah, and I'd say from a biblical standpoint and a Christian standpoint, you know, the word affiliation, it kind of rings of business and partnerships. And yeah, you and I will be affiliated so long as we get along. And then if we don't anymore, well, we'll just go our separate ways. But our schools, all of our universities are universities of the church. And they don't simply belong to the church in a business sense, but they are our responsibility to walk together and it's not a walking together by affiliation of we decided to get together. It's a walking together because Jesus Christ has sent us on this one mission to do it in the various places we find ourselves, wherever that is in the United States, or as we saw today at chapel with our partner churches around the world. So we're not simply affiliated. We are one in Christ. We're going to spend eternity together. So let's figure out how to walk together here on earth.
And that was from the beginning of each Concordia University or college.
Sure.
They started through the efforts of congregations of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
Yeah, I'll promote my beloved English district here. So in 1911, when the English district came into the Synod via an official vote for them to become their own district, they brought with them a couple things that the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod enjoys today. One of them happens to be the Lutheran Witness. That was originally an English district publication and one of our universities. I believe that one was at Wingfield, Kansas, St. John's. One of them was English district that we gave to the Synod, that we brought to the Synod in terms, it could be one of the North Carolina ones.
I think it was one of the Carolina
ones. But the point being that you say the congregations, you know, came together. This has been a focus of our denomination from the very beginning. You cannot have a church without having church workers. I mean, that is to say offering church. You can have church, certainly. But an organized religion needs people that come in and carry out the functions. And I think, you know, we talk a lot about the deficits that we have today, both in teachers and pastors. But, you know, if you really want to break it down, the unicorns in our church are actually church organists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I had a guy ask me last week if we're going to have, oh no, this was on Saturday at St. Paul's Confessio where I preached. He asked me, are we going to have summer programs for organists to advance, like, you know, their continuing education? Brilliant. Nobody's ever thought about doing something like this. And so the St. Paul, they're talking about St. Paul about maybe doing something next year. So, you know, when you look at the kind of pastors, teachers, DCEs, church organists, these kind of things, there's always a need. I can tell you in my parish life, I had a young man, his mother was our choir director, and he was a very accomplished pianist. And I said to his mother, I said, have you ever got him on the organ? And she said, no, we never. I said, put him on the organ. Let him play a Sunday. Well, you know, he's nervous. I don't care. That kid did phenomenal. Now, he left our parish. He went, you know, matured, went to college, left. And he's serving another church right now with his musical talents. But it was because we took a gift that he had. And I said to his mom, put him behind a bench. Let that kid play on the organ. You know, and so I find it as my job. I know Douglas feels this way. Whenever we're out, even now as CUS president, I'm always looking for those young people in the churches where I can say, have you thought about going into church work? I have the pleasure in this month, April, at the Fort Wayne Seminary to going, two of my congregational members will be receiving calls. That will be my eighth and ninth seminarians that I've encouraged and gone through. Now, you might ask yourself, why does that matter? Well, it matters because I'm number 53. My pastor had 54. There was one after me. But and I think those of us who serve in the office, whether teacher, preacher, pastor, organist, it's our obligation to encourage others. And we're seeing conversions at our campuses where students are going for a specific vocation, nursing or something, that while they're there at our Concordias are finding them a way into church work. And that's because of strong encouragement by those who are doing it. We can be our best advocate, but we can be our best enemy as well in not promoting the work of the church. So I really think we have an opportunity here to really expand what we're doing.
Absolutely. And expansion is the key there. In fairness, our seminary in Fort Wayne does have a organist institute. They do it every summer. But we want to take
colleges.
And we want to take that at the Concordia University system and expand it and make it available at all of our universities, because that gives us more exposure across the nation. Mm-hmm. And we have the facilities to do it. Our teacher students traditionally did learn to play the piano and play the organ because they knew they were going to be doing that in their, where they're going to be called. So we have facilities at all of our universities, and they're top-notch music facilities to do exactly that. And I know in my college experience, I was blessed to know many students who are accomplished organists, accomplished musicians, and they got that training at a Concordia.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me say about this idea, like of the music side of it. We have good facilities at all five universities, hands down. We have world-class facilities at Irvine and at Nebraska. And we're talking about the kind of facilities, for instance, in Irvine, the music studio that they have in Irvine, they told me is the same one that Jay-Z has at his home. Mm-hmm. And this is the best of the best of the best.
Yeah.
And they do some phenomenal work. In Irvine, they have that annual Christmas production that is on PBS.
It's amazing.
It's world class.
Yes. Yeah.
World class. And so, you know, if you do have people out there that are thinking about these things, all five of our universities have great programs. My high school choir director is director at Kurt Von Kampen at Concordia, Nebraska. Kurt was my high school director. And
that
he
was
is
my high school too.
Yeah, he is the best in the business. I'm just telling you, Kurt is one of the best choir directors. And he, I saw him the other day and I just told him, I said, you haven't aged since we had you, and you look the same, you talk the same. But now his son is the choir director at Concordia St. Paul.
Yep.
So, I mean, this is just a beautiful legacy that is carrying on from one to another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what I'm hearing is just building a culture of encouraging church work. I mean, we talk about that all the time on Set Apart to Serve, that it's a cultural thing in our congregations, in our churches, to just encourage church work. And I know, you know, talking about music, that's the reason I went to a Concordia. I didn't go into church work at the time, but I went to a Concordia because of the music opportunities and being able to serve the church with music. Even if I'm not a called worker, I can still serve the church with my musical abilities, and a Concordia was what made that happen. So I love talking about, you know, building up church workers, but also building up lay people who are very strong in their vocations and will build the church as we move forward.
That's right.
What are some, we have about 2 minutes left. What are some of the benefits and the challenges of the relationship of the Concordia University System schools, talking about being the church's schools? What are some of the benefits and the challenges of that relationship?
Yeah, we're working on that. I got to tell you that that's something that we're trying to work on. I think we have an obligation in the CUS to figure out, for instance, with seminary, pre-seminary students, what is the advantage of going to a Concordia University as opposed to going to a state school from a financial perspective? Mm-hmm. So we're working on that. I won't go into the details. There's some things happening right now that hopefully the next year or so will come out that'll talk about the benefits. Some of the challenges are very clear, and finances are always one of them. But I do think that finances can be controlled based on decision-making. One of the things that all of our Concordias are doing, and I would encourage any listener to consider both for CUS, for our Concordias, is the legacy of the endowments. The more money we can put into our endowments, the more can be thrown off on an annual basis to support the work. And again, without getting into a long discussion about this, there were some forces in Synod years ago, I think even within the last 20 years, that said, oh, you know, we shouldn't be putting our efforts in to building endowments. We should trust in God. Well, they preached that about life insurance back in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. And I can tell you today that I would tell any preacher that says, don't buy life insurance, trust in God. You're testing God in a negative and unfair way, because God has given you the ability to buy life insurance to help your family when you leave. That's a mechanism that we've put together that to not have it is really, I think, not wise. And so to build our endowments is an enormous way to help our Concordias with the financial struggles. But keeping them connected to Synod is always a massive deal, partly because they each have their own identity in the local areas. Mm-hmm. And let's just be honest, higher education is a different environment. People have their views of who they are as professors and teachers. And the truth of the matter is we have great faculty at our Concordias that understand the work of the church and the mission of the church. So while it's simultaneously difficult, I also think that we are have a, an advantage in the CUS system. But the finances are certainly number one. And I can just tell you, our Concordias are all healthy. They are all healthy. We can certainly use more support, but they're healthy and their presidents are making decisions that are operationally sound, I guess.
With about 30 seconds left in our time together today, how do we stay on top of what's happening with the Concordia universities and the system as well? How do we stay informed about that? And what can we look forward to next month?
Well, staying informed, go to cus.edu. All of our information is there. We have a monthly newsletter that you can sign up for on that site. We have a Facebook presence, so you can see some news there. Listen to the coffee hour, and you'll hear ads from our or spots from our different universities.
We'll be learning about the mechanical engineering program at Concordia University, Wisconsin very soon as well.
Yeah. Excellent.
It's coming along with a potential. One of our universities is looking at a full-out MD program.
So cool.
Well, thanks for joining us today. It's been great to have our conversation. Looking forward to next month. The Reverend Dr. Jameson Hardy, President, Concordia University System. Thank you.
Thank you.
And the Reverend Dr. Douglas Patel, Vice President, Concordia University System. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.